Hi, it's Craig Fisher on the Inside Talent Podcast, and you'll probably have noticed that we took some time off in the last few months from posting episodes to the podcast. We did a lot of live streaming while I was completing work on my book, Hiring Humans, which recently debuted and can be found at hiring-humans.com. We're going to come back and post a lot of those interviews to the podcast, and we'll have amazing new content for you coming up real soon with some special guest hosts. Thank you for staying with us. None of this could happen without you. Thank you. Okay, welcome, welcome, welcome to everyone watching the live stream, and to those of you who will watch this later, the replay. It's Craig Fisher, and I'm here with Mike Wolford and Auntie Kay. I'm going to get him to just say his last name because I don't do it well. From Claro. Claro is our data analytics partner, and I think Mike will be back in just a second. So, Auntie, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you, please.
Yeah, hi, Craig. My name is Antti Karjalainen, and I'm analyst here at Claro. And I provide data insights to our internal and external clients. I also participate in product development, and I work on our AI-driven projects. So happy to be here.
Good to have you. And for those that don't know it, Claro is a tool that I use to understand market data about salaries, supply, and basically the employer economy. So we use all kinds of insights from tools like this to better understand if employers are positioning themselves correctly, and you know, kind of where they should be spending their money. So we have Mike back. Mike, hi, introduce yourself. How's it going?
Hi, sorry about that. Internet just decided to go for a second. Yeah. I'm Mike Wolford. I'm the director of analytics at Claro, and I get the fun job of working with Antti and looking at all the interesting analytics and supply and demand data that's coming in real time for Claro.
We are going to talk today about some news that's come out recently about the number of jobs stating that they are remote declining. But the sentiment around that kind of work it continues to be very level or increase. And we are on a track to increase the number of remote workers by a lot by 2025. So this creates a little bit of a conundrum for employers. So we're going to discuss that. We're going to talk about sort of the latest economic news that employers would want to know about. And then we're going to talk about the AI boom. And is there a dot-com scenario where we have this huge renaissance for some parts of the economy only to burst like a balloon at some point? This is going to be fun. So I'm going to put some slides up, and I'm going to throw it over to Mike to get us started.
Sure. So... Thanks for having us. Yeah, we're just going to talk about the overall trends in the economy, especially the labor market, which is really our area of expertise. What's happening with remote work? It's really interesting as we're watching the data, like this battle and tug of war between the talent and the employers about remote work, and then the impact of artificial intelligence on the labor market itself, like what's actually happening. What do we expect based on the data? So that's what we're going to talk about. I guess we'll to the next slide. We could drop right in if you'd like.
Yeah, let's do.
Yep. So first thing we're seeing, and Antti jump in here. Antti sees the data a lot more closely than I do day to day. But the overall trend we see, and I think the interesting call out, is across all 16 industries that we're tracking. Like the S&P 500, we're watching the same industry index. Across the board, we're watching job postings decline. And what we as analysts are thinking, and as we see this sort of data, it's understanding that there's a decrease in demand for labor, but 5.5 million jobs or 5.8 million jobs, still very high demand, right? So what we're seeing is a softening in the demand for labor. Most likely the reason for that we see is the increase in interest rates to decrease and combat inflation. And it makes sense. And the reason for that is when we look across 16 industries and all 16 are going in the same direction, about the same pace, at the same time, that's typically an external influence, right? The market goes up and the market goes down, that's natural. But normally it'll be like 10 industries are up, six are down, or six are up and 10 are down, right? Like the market typically, industries move not in sync with each other. So when you see everything in the market do this, all of the industries all simultaneously, then there's probably an external cause for that, right? That's not a natural thing to happen. So we're seeing this drop in demand, and that is where we are today. Now, the expectation, and this isn't just from us, but from other analysts, will tell you, as soon as they think the chance of the Fed doing anything with interest rates goes away, you know, we'll start to see demand creep back up again. And the labor market start to recover. So, but from the data today, and we want to be clear, unemployment is at record low. So there's not a lot of talent out there to begin with, and the demand for labor is softening.
Can we talk about the interest rates real quick and kind of put that in layman's terms? So what we see in this scenario is interest rates continue to go up by the Fed on purpose to combat high cost of goods and living right now. And so you've got this combination of high interest rates and expensive everything, and that decreases buying power. Decreased buying power by consumers and businesses means decreased demand for companies' products, which means decreased demand for talent labor to supply that product. That's right. And in theory, if the Fed is successful, and over time, they generally are. It takes a couple of years sometimes, but it works. Costs will go down, and then interest rates will flatten out and start to go down again as well. Ante, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, we still expect Fed to raise interest rate one more time this year.
Yeah.
Just because the shelter inflation is at 7.7. And that is very sticky, and it requires and it maintains the inflation very high. So we have 3.2 now overall, but then when you remove the foods and energy, it's 4.7. So it's still out from their target. And I think that they want to make a message and say that they are very hawkish and they are going to one more rate hike this year. We are seeing, as you can see from this chart, we are monitoring real time on what's happening in the job market. And these figures are from yesterday. So benefit of Claro is that we can use the real time data and see that the employers are already reducing the number of opportunities. There is still a lot. 5.7 is still a strong number, but it's not going sideways. It's definitely tracking down and it's leading down, and it's in line with the Purchasing Manager Index, which has been contracting nine consecutive months, which means that there's less factory activity. The manufacturing is going down, and this is kind of the trend at the moment. We've had a lot of layoffs from the tech sector in the beginning of the year, and that kind of trend is now kind of sticking to others, and we can see that people are scaling back and hiring.
It's certainly affecting HR and recruiting. We know that just anecdotally. Okay, I'm going to jump to the next slide. Here we go.
Yeah, so remote work is an interesting feature of the economy in COVID. We learned that we could do it at scale. And now companies are in this kind of tug of war with talent about returning to office. So while the number of positions in total being offered that are remote has dropped, the focus and the percentage of applications that are going to those jobs is increasing. So even though at present it represents actually less than 10% of the open job postings right now, it's still accounting for at or near half of all the applications that are coming through. So there's one really strong preference from employers, come to the office, and there's one really strong preference from the talent, which is we want remote.
Yeah. It's interesting. I did a little research on this, looking at your numbers, and then I went out and found the Indeed report and the Adhuna report, and these have just come out, right? And so I was fascinated to understand that. So when I saw your data that said 10% of the jobs, less than 10% of the jobs are offering remote right now, then I looked at the Indeed Hiring Labs report that states that really only 12.7% of all jobs are fully remote for full-time employees. And 28.2% is some sort of hybrid. So that seems more in line with what we feel like we see. But here we are on LinkedIn, and the majority of people who are going to be on LinkedIn looking at something like this probably have an opportunity for remote work at the very least, or definitely hybrid. But in theory, by 2025, we'll be up to 22% full-time employees doing fully remote work.
Yeah, I think that here's a few things. As you can see from this chart, it's like we have tech definitely surprisingly tracking lower, and then other sectors following a suit. So that's kind of the trend. And you have to remember that you have a lot of tech companies that have recently laid a lot of people off, and taking very strong stance of return to office or return to past, as we say. And this can be only also seen as a kind of a tool to reduce the headcount discreetly, of putting very strong stance on and demanding workers to come in 50 miles within a certain hub like Amazon has done, or you know, companies like Zoom. So there's that there's definitely, it is a way of, you know, reducing cost. It is a big change for those that are impacted on that, because a lot of people move to from high cost areas to work somewhere else.
That's right.
During the pandemic, it's been like 3 years, people are used to it. They have adjusted their lifestyle to remote. And now when you have certain companies coming and announcing that their kind of like executive decision is to move back to office to hybrid or fully remote, like in case of Goldman Sachs, for example, announced this week, that's going to have a big impact on how talent will react to this, how people will react to this. If it's done on like, you know, top-down decision, if it hasn't been, you know, consulted with the workers and asked how they feel, who's ready to this, and if it's done purely on executive level, it's going to have an impact of turnover and attrition, that companies will see that talent that can prefers to work remotely will likely seek opportunities elsewhere, and maybe that's expected, but it's going to be a way of also a challenge for the management to manage that. Like if they have a key talent there who cannot attend, cannot commute to the office, or doesn't just want to come, how are they going to solve that? So I expect that there's going to be a lot of turnover, a lot of backlash on these companies, and these numbers might adjust. It seems that it's a trend now, but it might adjust. And one thing more is that the hybrid is brought up and said that it's a kind of preferred option, but hybrid is already very close to on-site, because you have to live within, you know, 50 miles, or you don't want to do 2-hour commute. So it will limit the talent pool for those companies. It will impact their diversity and equity strategies, because suddenly you have to hire within that range. So there's a lot of challenges that is coming there, but this is the trend that we see now on the data.
So I wonder a couple of things based on what you just said. Are some companies using this come back to the office scenario as a way not to have to do layoffs, right? Those that can't or won't can't work here, right? And so, I mean, it's a little bit of an excuse, but also, is this going to change the makeup of the employee population to become people who can afford to move back by an office, older workers that have, you know, empty nesters, or those that haven't established kids in school yet, things like that? Is it going to adversely affect and positively affect different parts of the population that currently aren't in those roles?
Yeah. And you can imagine it with the current interest rates, mortgages at 7%, if you have to sell your house in a low cost and acquire that or rent.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to sell right now, right?
No, nobody wants to sell right now. And you have a high, still, like you mentioned, the rents are high. So, you know, those that can are probably going to look other opportunities and or they're going to upskill and then maybe move on different roles, I would suspect. But obviously, it is not possible for every employee. So it will be interesting to see how this will play out. But I will expect that it's not going to be as smooth as many people think to move back from home to office.
I agree. I think we're in for a bumpy ride. I think we're in for an interesting renaissance of architecture and what's going to happen with these buildings. Minnesota recruiter, had a question and observation. He says, even though we're down in job posting numbers, are we still up significantly from Q3 of 2019?
Yeah. So I can look at, I know the BLS numbers for this off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. I don't have the Claro 2019 third quarter data off the top of my head, maybe. But demand was about 7.5 million jobs through 2019 on BLS. And right now we're sitting at about 8 or 9 million in the BLS. So directionally, we're comparable. Certainly above where we were in 2019. It's interesting. If you look at the curve on the JOLTS report, for example, it looks like COVID goes down and then it comes up and then it goes like this. But really, you could just actually almost draw a straight line through it. So It's really interesting in my mind.
It's almost as if COVID was the type of international conflict the U.S. needed to come out of a 2019 slump.
Fair enough.
Could be looked at that way, right?
Yes, we definitely got a boost from the federal government to work it out pretty fast.
Yep.
And we're still riding that result of that stimulus that we got.
Okay, so let's talk about this AI boom. I'm very interested in, you know, what you guys are seeing with this and what's going to happen.
Yeah, so I was alive. I'm going to date myself a little. I was I was in high school and college during the dot-coms, and the kind of collective memory we have is if it had a website, you got funded, right? Mm-hmm. And there was some hysteria. AI has created hype, clearly, like that, and so we will see something similar where AI powered companies, doesn't really matter, right? There's going to be a moment where if it's AI powered, we're going to invest. So in that case, we expect to see some similarities between what happens with AI and the dot-coms. The question really will be which companies and product lines end up shaking out as being commercially viable. Like, we got Amazon from the dot-coms, right? But mm-hmm. there weren't a ton of companies we actually did get from the dot-coms. Very few actually survived and went on to make products that went on and offered services that made money. So we'll see a similar thing, I think, happen with AI, where we'll see this huge explosion of, doesn't really matter, it's AI powered, let's invest, let's buy, let's take it public. There'll be this hysteria. I mean, we can expect that. That's kind of, I think, baked in at this point, that we humans do this and AI is just the newest thing to do it to. But I think the thing is, like, to understand how this thing grows. I was on with, you know, Glenn Cathy the other day and other panelists, and they were talking about asking the AI what it thinks. And so, like, this is a different tool in that we've never had a thinking tool before. We've never had a tool like that. So the exponential growth is going to be hard to understand. And then we're going to see, I think the first level of productization is narrow AI. So you have your AI doctor, your AI therapist, your AI lawyer, right? Like very specific, narrow area of expertise.
Right.
And I think we're going to see the first level of productization there. Your first, you know, AI psychologist. It's very expensive to have healthcare like that. It's hard to get access to healthcare. But if you can have an AI that's on demand and downloadable onto your phone, I think that's a product, an actual product that you can sell and make money at. And I think that's probably where we're going to start to see the productization of AI, where it actually starts to make an impact on the economy because it is offering a product or service for money that solves a problem.
So, little known fact, you guys probably know this, the first ever example of a conversational chatbot back in the 60s was basically a psychologist. It just restated what you typed to it back as a question. And people lost their minds. Students were and interns were using this product at a university where it was developed, and they would literally start pouring their hearts out to this chatbot because it would just respond, "Oh," or "Why do you feel that way?" And it's amazing. So I think you're right. I think that that while we say that machines can't feel empathy, that's correct, but they can mimic it.
Yeah, I think the AI is going to be in the most software, at least it's been. You can see how fast Microsoft has embedded AI on their products. It's going to be in most softwares that are going to be successful going forward. We have that in our system and we use that extensively. Oh, yeah. And you can see that on demand. If I looked at this, I looked at the premium for AI skills on software engineers, and there was 16% a premium for those software engineers that had an AI skill, so artificial intelligence or machine learning, compared to those that didn't have. And so there's a big demand for this talent. And I think a lot of people are now training themselves and trying to upskill and learning about different technologies related to AI. And there's a new, like Mike said, there's a lot of companies that are creating products on this field. And so it is exciting time. And I think that is something that many companies maybe should do, is also think that how can they upskill and train their existing workforce to meet the demand of this and how they can benefit from it. And I think that initially it's going to be augmenting their certain tasks in different departments, and it's going to evolve from there to become fully automatic and probably replace some functions, but it's going to take some time. And another thing for this is, which is exciting, is that what is going now is that companies want to use the AI models to work on their own proprietary data. And that is the big step that we're going now, that they can fine tune the model and get a better responses, because it's not enough to use something that's been
open source,
uploaded in 2001. Yeah. They want to be able to review legal documentations or something that takes a lot of effort and task, and it's language related, or producing analytics and things like that. So that is like the current step where we are, and I think that one from there is like fully automated models.
And if you want to understand where next, what's going to happen next, it's actually following the same pattern of disruption we've seen in the past. So high cost, low satisfaction. An example from the data would be healthcare. In the US, we spend the highest per capita on healthcare, and our satisfaction ratings are usually in the 20s to 30%. When you see that combination, it doesn't really matter what technology is, it's ripe for disruption. And so the larger that difference is between cost and satisfaction, the more you can expect to see disruption in that industry. So if you want to know where next and how much, figure out where costs are relatively high and consumer satisfaction is relatively low, and that's where next.
Yeah, agreed. So some of us have been using AI tools at the employer level for a few years, right? And we've been watching it expand and grow, but the consumerization of it with open source and even subscription models has just, like, somebody introduced the mobile phone, right? I mean, it's been that kind of rapid uptake, and there's hardly a day now that I don't use AI for something, right? If an app that I'm using doesn't have an extension or a bolt-on for AI, I don't want to use it. And there are certain situations, of course, that we can't use it. George says, isn't this sort of just like a move to the cloud? Yes, it is. Absolutely. But this is where the cloud is consuming a lot of information and summarizing it for us. That's the best way I can kind of concisely say what AI does now. It summarizes well. It doesn't really think, but it can analyze and compute and summarize. So it's computers doing computer things, really. It's not seriously intelligent as you would think about it for humans. Angela Huber says, I'm curious if there's any talk and data around consumer trust of AI. And yes, of course. I mean, guys, what do you think?
Yeah. So I don't know if I could put this in the chat for everybody, but there is research about what this is, and there's a good white paper on it where they experimented. I'm happy to send that link where they address this issue of intelligence or not. But as far as you're concerned, I think really what to view it in a lot of ways is just another technology, just another disruptor. And in other ways, it's unique. In some ways, this is where we can't predict. Like, it will eliminate certain jobs faster than we thought. And other jobs we suspected would be vulnerable to automation are suddenly very resilient. So this is the hard thing about it. It's very hard to predict. What is certain is that it will be ubiquitous. And like, it won't matter what profession you're in, what part of this profession you're in, you will be using some tool that empowers your work. And so there's no going back here. And for context, let me give you a kind of a reason why. Everything that we do in business, no matter what process it is, requires communication, typically written communication, that are sets of instructions. Humans have been the only thing able to do that up until now. And so now you have this ability to completely reorganize everything. And like you said, it's really good at summarizing. So for us in talent acquisition, kind of the upside, and maybe not directly answer here, but like the upside will be, it can look at all of your data for the last 3 years about who you hired and who left, and then come up with a workforce plan for you and say, okay, based on, you know, your patterns, your specific patterns, your specific things, here's what you should be looking for in 2024. Here's your recruiting strategy.
And that's realistic, because now the models are getting sophisticated enough to look at economic trends and make economic predictions. And where we've tried to do workforce planning in the past, and we're largely wildly unsuccessful, like all companies are wildly unsuccessful at workforce planning, that's going to actually become possible. I mean, it's gonna really happen. So, Antti, do you want to talk just a little more about narrow AI before we move on?
I think Mike you wanted to talk on that topic?
Sure. Yeah. So narrow AI is just going to be very specific one skill set AI. You're going to have an AI attorney, an AI real estate agent. Like that will be the beginning. Obviously, there's going to be competition, so there'll be many versions. But like that's what we're going to see, I think, as the first commercially viable products that come out of here. The first startups that start to see real progress and real profits are going to be the AI sourcer, the AI HR partner, the AI legal counsel, right? Like generally speaking. So one of the things that you can do today, GPT-4 has already passed the bar. So you could say, take a look at my job description and make sure I'm legally compliant with EEOC. Yep. And it'll look up EEOC. It's got a link reader. It'll look at your job description. It'll look at the law and say, yeah, it's compliant, but here's a few suggestions. Or no, it's not, and here are the problems. So like, that's what I'm talking about. It's going to be focused on very specific areas of expertise. Whereas the first models, they're really generalists. You could sit down and talk to it about anything on any topic. And the next generation, the productized generation, you know, the AI realtor isn't going to be able to answer any of your questions on physics or history or mathematics, right? It's like going to be only focused on real estate law, but it'll know everything about real estate law and know every recorded transaction and every price. And it'll be able to do what you're talking about, analyze the economics, look at the prices of the houses around and decide what's a fair, you know, price. So
a per lot square of foot, that, all yeah. of that. Yeah. And better than your average chatbot.
Exactly. So that's what we mean by narrow AI. We're going to look at productization of this broad database. So you're going to see GPT powered realtor, GPT powered lawyer, GPT powered therapist, all of these professions. They're going to sit on top of that huge database, but they're really only going to pull through and on their own have that one area of expertise. And so if they don't know something, then they'll be able to access the bigger model.
So what Mike's talking about for us consumers with ChatGPT-4 is enabling extensions, right? As it is, ChatGPT-4 won't go look up anything on the web. It'll tell you I'm just a chatbot. I'm dumb. I don't know how to do that. And if you enable extensions, and that particular one is called WebPilot, it can go out and look at anything. You can also enable it to go out and look at PDFs. And this is really good in research. If you haven't enabled extensions on your ChatGPT-4 and you haven't paid your $20 a month subscription yet, I'm a fan.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, next slide. What's happening coming up soon? We're going to do this again around this time in September and October. We're going to talk about emerging hiring trends and technologies versus the economy. And then strategies for attracting and retaining top talent in what we see. And we will know by October what the economy is going to look like for the next couple of quarters. And then we'll be live in person here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for the TalentNet Live Conference on November 9th and 10th. If you want to join us for that, it's going to be at the fabulous Palace Theater on Main Street in Grapevine, Texas, and you can go to talentnetlive.com for registration. We'd love to see you all there. Parting thoughts from you, Claro Brainiacs.
Go ahead, Auntie.
Well, this was fun. I mean, let's do this again. Enjoyed it, Craig. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Craig. Always interesting to talk about what's happening under the hood and in the data. And hopefully we provided some valuable insights to the audience.
Yes. And we had a fun caveman lawyer comment there, and I'm a big fan of that skit. Yeah. All right. So thanks to Mike and Auntie, and thank you for watching today. And we will see you soon. Check with Mike directly if you want to link to the resources that he was talking about. Maybe he'll even post them on his LinkedIn profile.
Sounds good.
Or updates. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, everyone. See you soon.
Hey, it's Craig. Get my new #1 best-selling book, Hiring Humans, at hiring-humans.com.